At Highland, we're all about celebrating little wins and little ways to innovate digital processes. There's no customer pain point too small for us to help with. Maybe that's why more than half of the Fortune 100 looks to Highland to connect their content and data, improve processes, and turn little efficiencies into big wins for their customers and clients. Highland, intelligent content solutions for innovators everywhere at highland.com.
Kelly Clarkson here to let y'all know that it's the holidays at Wayfair. No matter your space, style, or budget, shop Wayfair.com to get your home holiday ready.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Moncrief on News Talk.
When a child is stillborn, obviously it's devastating. It is one of those sudden and shocking circumstances where it's not entirely clear what the parents should do. A charity called Now I Lay Me Down to Sleep helps people in this situation by doing something that initially might seem strange. They send in a photographer. Anne-Marie Gillooly was a recipient of the service and is now a volunteer with them. Anne-Marie, good afternoon to you.
Hi, Sean. How are you?
January the 15th on 2015 was...
Yeah, January 12th, actually, 2015. So I was almost 42 weeks pregnant with my first son, Max. It had been a very normal, low-risk pregnancy. Everything looked fine. We were just kind of waiting for that call to get induced. And one day I noticed a reduction in movement and I wasn't really feeling anything. So I went in to get checked, pretty oblivious that anything might be seriously wrong. I actually thought on the way in, oh, it's great, I'm going in on a Sunday because I'm due to get induced on the Monday. And I kind of thought I might skip the queue. And they checked his heartbeat first with a Doppler and couldn't get anything. And I was still, I actually cringe when I look back at how innocent and oblivious I was, kind of making jokes with the midwife. And she said, oh, it's probably broken. And I know now that they tell that to everybody. Mm. So they took me into another room that had an ultrasound, a very high tech ultrasound. And I just remember they brought up a picture of his heart. And you could see the four chambers and they just pointed to it and they said, Anne-Marie, there's his heart, but there's no heartbeat. And there's this, I could talk all day about what happens when that moment happens, but there's this writer called Zoe Cloaks. She does this thing, sayinggoodbye.org, and she kind of writes different things about baby loss. And she has this quote and it says, when you hear the words, there is no heartbeat, a trapdoor opens and you fall.
Yeah.
And I think that is just the most eloquent way of putting it. You feel like you're underwater. You can't take in what they're saying. I felt so angry at them. I thought, this is like absolutely preposterous. Like, this isn't like, I have a fully grown baby. This doesn't happen. And anyway, I went home that evening. They kind of sent me home to come back in the next day. And that evening I went into labour myself, ironically, 24 hours too late. And Max was born the next day. I think the only way that I could get through labour is kind of through denial. And yeah. I somehow managed to convince myself, not on a deep level, but in my head, my mantra was, they're wrong about this and he's going to be born and he's going to cry and it'll be like, you know, a lifetime. Or, you know, those movies are the past lifetime. But I was also terrified because I think I knew deep down that they weren't wrong and I had seen the still heart. And I was so scared about what he would look like and would I want to hold him. And, you know, I'm from Donegal, so wake culture is quite a, you know, prevalent thing.
Yeah.
I've been to lots of wakes, but I was always fairly keen to move fairly quickly out of the room with the person that was deceased. And to think about holding the body of my baby was quite terrifying and disturbing, really.
Mm.
And then he was born and he was placed into my arms and he wasn't a dead baby anymore. He was my son. And he was just beautiful and perfect. And I felt this incredible surge of love and of pride and of all of the things that anybody feels when they have a baby. But in the midst of all of that was this feeling of confusion. Why am I looking at this still little body of my baby and feeling such love and such, why am I staring? Am I normal to do this, to stare at his ears and to admire his tiny little nose? And you really have to, I remember myself and my husband talked about it afterwards, that we both had those feelings of just wonder and weirdly of joy at finally having him here in our arms. And we were both like, are we actually going crazy now? Because surely all we should be feeling is sorrow. But in the midst of all of that, there was this pride as well. And yeah, I guess that's when the conversations start happening about memory making, and where organisations like Now I Lay Me Down to Sleep come into the mix.
Yeah. And at the time, I assume the people in the hospital were you in?
In the National Maternity Hospital.
And they knew how to, I assume, because they dealt with this kind of thing before. And so the idea of holding Max, that I assume they suggested that, because you don't really know how you're going to feel about it.
Yeah, look, it's not an uncommon thing. And I always remember going to an antenatal class and the antenatal education midwife talking about, you know, if you ever feel your baby stop moving, come in. And there was this one woman once, and she came in and it was too late and the baby was gone. But it was said in a way, and I get that it was to stop frightening people, but it was said in such a way that it was like so rare in the history of the hospital that they nearly had a corridor named after her. And I remember her saying, trust me, you don't want to be that person. And it's weird. It was almost like I had a premonition, because I was really moved by it. And I remember leaving the antenatal class that night really upset, thinking, oh my God, I don't want to be that person. And then I was that person. And then I met the person who it had happened to 2 days before me in the same hospital, and the person who it had happened 3 days. You know, it's not as uncommon as we like to believe that it is.
Yes.
But but I guess wisdom about what you do when your baby dies has changed hugely over the years, and it has changed because of generations of bereaved parents changing it. So 30 years ago, I don't know if you've ever heard of Killeeny. The Killeeny are these little unmarked graves all over the country. So it was basically believed that a stillborn baby, I think the teachings of the church is something like that, they don't have a soul, so they're not allowed to be. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So they were buried in places off borders. So basically there's one in Donegal near where I'm from, which is an offshore island, and people would walk out under the cover of darkness, usually the dad with the baby in a little hand carved fruit box or something, and bury the baby there. They would never mark the grave. They would never talk about it again. They were told to go home and get over it. And that was seen as the best thing to do. But actually, I've met lots of those parents over the last 10 years that they never forgot. They were just not allowed to speak about it. So slowly, organisations like A Little Lifetime, like Félacon, like Now I Lay Me Down to Sleep, like Annam Cara, there's just a huge group of these organisations that have kind of nudged that understanding, that have said, we need to talk about our babies. We need to acknowledge that they lived. Even if their feet never touch the ground, we will carry them always. And there is such healing that comes from making memories in the hospital. You're given a little memory box by Félacon that has like teddy bears in it, that you give one to your baby in the time that you're in the hospital, and you keep one and then you switch them over before the baby's buried, so that you have a thing that was with them. And like, wonderful people knit and crochet little blankets, and you just know that your baby's been wrapped in this love, that somebody put, knowing where they were ultimately going to end up, and made them specially with, you know, that outpouring of love and support.
And on the day, was it on the day then that they, because as I understand it, on the 12th of January 2015 was when Now I Lay Me Down to Sleep first started operations in Ireland.
Yeah, yeah. I think that was their official launch. So I think they had done a few sessions in 2014. But I believe the day that Max was born was the day that they were having their, launch day or whatever with their volunteers.
And when it was suggested to you to bring in a photographer, you had already so many emotions floating around.
Yeah.
What was your initial reaction to that?
We had been wanting to kind of take photos, and I think we were kind of furtively taking them, but thinking, oh my God, if a midwife comes in and sees that we're taking photos, they're going to send us to psychiatric help. So we were kind of doing that. So the first, we had this amazing midwife, Bridget. She had this big, thick Donegal accent and was a breath of fresh air. But she came bursting into the room to us. And I remember her coming down the corridor and she said, I'm going into this room. I hear there's a gorgeous wee baby in here and I want to go and see him. And I remember thinking, nobody has told this woman that the baby has died and she's going to come in. And I was bracing myself for the awkwardness of her bursting in and realizing and basically reversing out the door. But instead, she burst in and she came over and she said, oh, he's just as beautiful as I heard he was. And look at his nose. And who's this? Where did you come up with the name? And she, in that moment, validated for us all of those things that we were feeling, all of the pride and the love and the positive feelings. And she told us in a very special way that that was okay. And she started talking to us then about, now we lay me down to sleep. And the name really rolls off the tongue. Yes. But yeah, so do you know, the first thing before we made any phone calls, before any photographer came in, the first thing that hearing about the service did for us was validated that this was an okay thing to want to do. Mm. That taking pictures, would we prefer pictures of bright eyes and gummy smiles and broccoli all over his face? Absolutely. But that wasn't an option that was available to us. So it was literally, we have these beautiful postmortem photos or we don't have photos of him at all.
Yeah.
And so just knowing that it was so normal that an organization existed, that it was so acceptable that other people were going to be doing it, that people were volunteering their time and their energy and their efforts to do it, suddenly validated for us all of the kind of memory making instincts that we had.
Yeah.
And then my husband called and spoke to Ruth, who was the dispatcher at the time. And I guess from that moment, we were just enveloped in another community of just support. And she was so kind on the phone. And she organized for our photographer Dee to come out. And again, Dee came into the room a stranger. We didn't know what to do. Or my husband was a keen amateur photographer and he's actually a professional photographer now. He had all the camera gear there, but you don't know what to do with it at the time. So her coming in to help us pose, to remind us to take pictures, sorry, she took the pictures, but she took pictures of his hands and his feet and all of those photos that somebody would take in a newborn session, you know, yeah, the wedding yeah. rings on his fingers and all of those things that would kind of tie you back to that moment. Because when you're there, it feels like the most difficult thing you'll ever go through. But now, 5 years, 10 years down the road, I would give anything to be back in that room for a moment and be able to hold him one more time. And actually having those photos, and I always encourage people, if somebody reaches out to me and says, you know, I've just had this news and I kind of write a blog, so sometimes people will find me through that. And I say, think about all of the threads of memories you can create. You know, if there's a special scent, you know, I don't know if you can burn a candle in the hospital, but have essential oils that is something that, you know, when you smell vanilla in the future, your mind will come back there.
Connection.
Play a special song, read a special. We read that book to him, Before You Sleep by Benji Bennett. I don't know if you've read that. It's a beautiful book. And all of those things sort of are threads of memory and sensory things that will allow you to come back to that moment and obviously not actually revisit it, but kind of emotionally feel close at the times where you need to.
After, and just for people who are wondering, that like the photographs are like the regular, you know, newborn baby photographs. So, you know, if one were one to look at them, you just think that's what they are. Obviously, there's a massive degree of poignancy to them as well. Afterwards, Anne-Marie, did you have to go through a process then that, you know, many people around you knew you had been pregnant? Did you then have to go through this painful process of having to tell people?
Yeah. So even before he was born, we contacted our family and I remember telling people, they're telling us that he's died, but not quite believing it. So, and then, yeah, absolutely telling, you know, the neighbours had seen me waddling in and out of the house. And I remember them over the garden wall one day saying, so where's the baby? And I had to tell. And, but actually telling people is not the hardest part.
Mm.
It's the awkwardness that comes with telling people. And it's the refusal to talk about it. So I had these mad conversations with people where they would come up to me and you knew they were like, you know, bracing themselves, and they were coming up going, okay, we're going to have a conversation. And they would ask me, you know, have I seen anything good in the cinema? And I'd be, okay, we're doing this, pretending this hasn't happened. And we kind of had the conversation. And then they bipped away as happy as anything, going, I didn't make her cry. I spoke to her. We don't need to mention the whole baby thing, and everything's grand. And they moved on. And I left that conversation devastated and annoyed at myself for not bringing it up. And I think people feel that there is something, some magic combination of words that they have to find that is going to make this okay.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Actually, all they have to say is, I'm really sorry. You know, would you like to tell me about him? Do you have any pictures? Would you like to show me? And allowing that, I had one friend, Carrie, and she must have just listened to me telling the story 50 times, and she just let me, and just doing that. And I always remember my father-in-law, who's since passed away. He was just the most amazing man. And he came over one day, a couple of days after we had buried Max, and he sat in the house, and I was sitting in a chair crying, and my husband was sitting looking completely shell-shocked. And we had this awkward hour of just sitting there. And I just thought, oh, poor John, he just wants to get out of here. And this is really awkward for him. And as he was going out the door, he said, can I come back and sit with you tomorrow? And I just, it's one of my favourite moments and memories of him. And I often told him, like, just that willing to be there, to sit with people in their pain and in their discomfort, and to acknowledge that their baby lived. Mm. And is, you know, you'll rarely upset somebody by acknowledging it. I always say, if you know somebody who has just lost a baby, you know, people will say, what should I do? And the first thing I would always say is acknowledge it. The second thing is take the date of that baby's birthday and put it as a calendar reminder on your phone and have it coming up as a yearly reminder, because to speak to them about it now is really lovely, but to speak to them about it in 17 years time,
yeah,
and to touch base and to say, I just want you to know, even if they're not vocally sharing it, you can be sure that it's on their minds and in their heart. And to say on the 12th of January, you know, in 8 years, or, you know, coming up on this January, it would have been Max's 10th birthday, for people to reach out and say, I'm thinking about him, is just the most powerful and wonderful gift that you can give to any parent.
Yeah.
We all want our child to, you know, they don't get to make an impact on the world, but you don't want them to think that they're just erased from history.
Mm. It was, I suppose, obviously this was life changing in all sorts of ways,
yeah,
but also for your husband, in the sense you mentioned he was an amateur photographer,
yeah,
and this kind of spurred him,
yeah,
to go into it full time.
Yeah.
And now on a voluntary basis, he takes photographs for,
yeah,
Now I Lay Me Down to Sleep.
Yeah,
well,
yeah, yeah. He always thought that he was always an amazing photographer, and people always told him he was great. But he never had the confidence. And then after Max died, he was like, do you know what? I face tougher things than, you know, dealing with potential failure here. And he started doing it. He got a full frame professional camera and just started. And he absolutely loves it now, and he's amazing. And then after we had a bit of a journey with infertility and IVF and the whole thing to have our second son, and after he was born, John went through the process of signing up for Now I Lay Me Down to Sleep, and he got the approval as a volunteer photographer on Max's 3rd birthday. And yeah, so he's one of the photographers that goes out, and they do the most amazing. All of the volunteers within Nilmitz is probably an easier way to say it. They're all amazing. But I've joined the board in the last year, and do social media, and, you know, we're working on a website and stuff. And I did a survey recently of the volunteers and kind of asked them, what were your fears before signing up? And these people, they're not superhuman. They don't have some next level, you know, skills or emotional intelligence that the ordinary person. They had all of the same fears that anybody would have. They were afraid that they would cry in the room. They were afraid that it would impact them emotionally and mentally. They were afraid that they wouldn't have the technical skills for it. They were afraid that they would say something wrong and upset the parents. And all of them did it anyway. And I meet so many people through the other charities that I have involvement with that had Now I Lay Me Down to Sleep photos, and they are just all so incredibly grateful for them. And as you say, these are photos that look, especially that style of newborn photos where the baby's often asleep and curled up anyway. They actually, like a guy came into my house yesterday to fix something and we have Max's picture hung on a, what you call it, canvas on the wall. And it's quite big. And he didn't look at it twice. And I know for a fact that he just assumed it was one of the other kids. And my little boy, that's how he knows his brother. You know, Max was born and died before Flynn ever got to meet him. And I have a gorgeous picture of his feet. And my little two-year-old girl goes up and she said, I want to tickle the baby's feet. And she goes up and, you know, tickles. And they have this awareness, you know, we don't overly, you know, put it on their shoulders. It's not their grief to carry, but Max is very much part of our family. And those pictures are very much what makes him real within the family.
And for the photographers, is the situation, it can be different, I assume, that you know, the couple in there, they're dealing with the surprise and the upset in different ways.
Yeah, absolutely.
And maybe sometimes they change their mind, do they?
And they absolutely can. Yeah, so sometimes they will just decide that they don't want to. Or sometimes they might decide to get the photos and it might take them a year before they actually open the photos. Mm-hmm. And maybe sometimes they never open the photos, but, you know, I would think that it's better to have them and have that option than, you know, your window is so short and so finite that if you don't get those opportunities, the time will pass. But yeah, absolutely. The photographers go into those rooms and they know a small amount of information. The midwives are usually the ones who will call our dispatch line and kind of tell them what the situation is. So they tend to tell them a small amount about how the parents are coping and, you know, how they're feeling about the photo session and how the gestation of the baby. So we do photos from 24 weeks generally. So obviously, and there can be different conditions. Sometimes stillbirth can be unexpected and an otherwise healthy baby. And sometimes there can be a diagnosis and there can be, you know, physical things that are going on with the baby. So we try to arm the photographers with as much information as we can beforehand. But absolutely, I always think to turn the handle on that door and to walk into the most difficult moment in somebody else's life is just, it's hero stuff. And the same for our dispatchers who answer the phone, because sometimes they answer to the parents as well. And they all do it with such love and care and compassion. And they really are amazing.
Yeah. Now, before I let you go, you could do with a few more photographers. Any particular parts of the country?
So we actually don't have any photographers at the moment in Wexford. So we would love to have a photographer there. And then Dublin has the majority of stillbirths and things because of the national hospitals. So we're always looking for more photographers in Dublin. What we would say is if you've thought about it more than once, then you can probably do it. But what we would always encourage is give us a ring. We will get one of our photographers or our dispatchers if you're interested. If you're not a photographer but would like to volunteer for the service, there's roles in dispatch and administration as well. And we will get one of our current volunteers to give you a very honest overview of what the role is and all of the difficulties of it. And then you can make a decision about whether you want to go forward to it. But it's just a lovely supportive community as well. And you're given a huge amount of support.
And how would people get in contact to do that?
So if you contact Jim at nilmits.org.
They can. There is a website they can find it on.
Yeah.
Now I let me down to seat. In January, as you said, Max would be 10. So do you mark his birthday? What do you do that?
The last couple of years we've gone to the zoo with our other kids and we try to do something really nice and positive. You know, I parent my other children by, you know, cleaning noses and standing on sidelines and for my toddler just walking after her, clearing up the massive destruction she leaves in her wake. And for Max, I do things like this. And, you know, I am so grateful to come on here and be able to open up those conversations. And like so many years ago, people were told to forget about it. And every generation of bereaved parents try to have these conversations to make it a little bit easier underfoot. And if by having this conversation, the next time somebody goes up to a bereaved parent and feels that little bit of confidence to just say, I'm sorry, then this is a conversation so worth having. So thank you very much.
Yeah, well, thank you very much for coming. I must say, because I was looking at some of the photographs that you sent on.
Yeah.
And I was To be honest, I was worried I was going to start blubbing through. Yeah. But actually, you made it easier for me. Thank you so much for coming in to talk to us. Now I Lay Me Down to Sleep is the name of that organisation. You can Google it and get in contact with them, especially if you'd like to volunteer. Anne-Marie Galouli, thank you very much
thank
for
you,
coming
Sean.
In to us
thank
today.
You.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.
What does innovation sound like? It sounds like the luxury of being in the moment with your customer, client, or patient. It sounds like having the right information right when you need it. It sounds like being at your best for your customers and your business. Thanks to Hyland's intelligent content solutions that improve digital processes, innovators everywhere are able to do their thing better, whatever that thing is. Now, who doesn't like the sound of that? Hyland, for innovators everywhere, visit hyland.com.